and beyond. All right. So this Thursday, we have our church-wide prayer gathering. I think we had one so far this semester. No, this is actually our first one, right? Because we had the all-nighter. And then this is our first Thursday church-wide prayer gathering. So this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. at the Sinclair Room. So please join us for that. And then this Friday, for Access, we're going to be continuing on in our series, Connected. All right. This past Friday, we did a bait and switch on you guys. So that we were going to talk about relationships, but ended up talking about pre-Christians, which is even more important, right? So this Friday, the surveys that you guys took, we're going to be talking about that together and talking about the romantic relationship. Okay, Connected, so please join us for that this Friday. And then the experience and classes are coming up. Membership is going to be next Sunday. It's going to be before church at 12:30, I believe, and then experiencing ministry is going to be the following Sunday. All the specific information in terms of time and location, it'll be on the web, so if you can sign up for that online as well. And then just lastly, this is a save-the-date announcement. This is for our upcoming Ignite conference. For those of us who are returning students, sophomores, juniors, and seniors, you guys know what our Ignite conference is. This is our conference for our college students. Every summer we have our Ignite conference that centers around missions, okay? And so for our freshmen, that's what it is. And this year, what we're gonna do is what we decided for the Ignite conference. Usually what we did was we, you know, made our way up to Ann Arbor and then we had it all together with everyone. But what we decided was that instead of doing that every year, we're gonna do that every other year. I think it just becomes a little bit more feasible in terms of travel costs and so forth. And then on those every other years, each of the HMCC churches are going to have their own Ignite conference that's going to be more geared towards the needs of that local church. And so this coming summer, we're still going to be having our Ignite conferences, but it's just not going to be together. It's going to be at different times. And for us, we're going to have it at the beginning of our summer. And so it's going to be June 3rd through the 5th. It's going to be right here in Austin. So for some of us who are going to be away, whether you're going to be in Dallas or Houston, really want to encourage you guys to come back and join us for it. We're going to be launching off the summer and really kicking off the summer with thinking about missions. And even though some of us, we might not necessarily be going on a missions trip per se, how do we continue to live out this vision of engaging in the mission of God? While we're going to be taking classes here in Austin, or we're going to be back home in Dallas, or in Houston, or wherever you're going to be. And so I think it's going to be a really unique opportunity for all the HMCC churches. So save the date. It's going to be June, once again, 3rd through the 5th. And then not the summer of 2016, but the summer of 2017. That's when we'll do the Ignite with everyone. Okay? So if you guys can remember that. And then just lastly, we're going to be doing the Peru fundraiser next week. Believe it or not, there's two more weeks, and then our Peru team is going to be leaving. And so next Sunday, we're going to be doing our presentation, and then after that, we're going to be doing a fundraiser. For the fundraiser, I just wanted to give you some information on it. You can donate as little as you want or as much as you want, okay? There is no you must donate this amount. We're just simply asking you to pray and asking you to really think about what is it that God is laying in your heart, because we believe that every one of us were called to participate in missions. Some of us, it's going to be going. Others of us, it's going to be supporting. And all of us, it's going to be prayer, right? And so we're going to be donating. We're going to be asking you to partner with us by donating. And then we, as an incentive, I guess, the team decided if you donate $15 or more, and so I think even for college students, hopefully this will be doable enough, that you will get a special limited edition HMCC Peru trip t-shirt, okay? So you don't get to see the design beforehand. You just gotta go by faith that it's gonna look really cool, right? So if you donate $15 or more, then you get a t-shirt. When you donate, you sign up for it, size, color, and then after we come back from the trip, That's when we're going to give you your T-shirt. So just because of that time frame, unfortunately, it didn't work out where we can get the T-shirt to you guys before we leave. But we figure that'll give you more reason to be praying for us, right? Or bring them back safely so that we can get our T-shirt. Right, so, okay. All right, 1 Corinthians 12, 12 through 27. We're wrapping up in our series, Ecclesia. We've been talking about this for the last 2 weeks. And by the way, I'm going to sound a little bit weird today. I've been sick all week. I think many of you know that. And I've never been this sick I've never been this sick like this many times. So it's been quite a journey, not only for me, but especially for my wife. Especially this week, I was pretty much out the entire week. I wasn't able to do anything. In fact, I think I stepped on the scale yesterday because I was starting to feel a little bit better, and I lost a ton of weight. And I think I'm back at the weight that I used to be when I was in middle school. So I haven't been this skinny in a long time, which might be a good thing, right? So, and then going to Peru, maybe I might actually keep it off this time. So, but I'm really thankful for my wife. She's been a trooper, so I'm getting better. But then Isaiah is now sick. So it's been this vicious cycle. I think our family, for the last month and a half, someone has been either infected with pink eye or been sick with flu or something or rather. So we're hoping that once Isaiah's done, then that's it. We're praying that it'll stop this, I don't know what you would call it, cyclical sickness. In my mind, I'm thinking demonic sickness, all right? The cycle has to be broken with Isaiah. So I was trying to encourage him, like, you must break the cycle, Isaiah. So pray for yourself while mommy and daddy go to church. Okay, so we're going to be closing off this series. And then next week, I'm really excited for this new series that we're going to be starting next week. For pretty much the remainder of the semester, we're going to be doing a study on the book of James. I think it's going to be really appropriate for us because when you think about the book of James, it's really the wisdom for today, right? Because when you think about the book of James, it's really practical. And it's really about how we as Christians can live out our faith in the context of living in the society. And when I think about some of the problems and the situations and the challenges that people were faced with, the audience that James was writing to, I think it's going to be very applicable to us. But before we do that, we're going to be wrapping up this series called Ecclesia, right? It's the Greek word for the gathering or assembly of God's people or the church. And then so I'm going to do a little bit of a reminder of what we've talked about so far before we get into today's topic, okay? So this is everything that we've talked about so far, okay? So let's try to rewind our minds and think about the things that we've talked about. So starting from that first part, if you guys remember, we talked about really when it comes to the church, the challenge is not to see the church from our point of view, right? Because seeing the church from our point of view is church is what? It's about the location. Or church is about our preference. Or church is about the group of people that we really like. Or the church is about the group of people that we're familiar with. Or church is about that building. Or it's about this building. Or church is about that worship style. Or it's about that pastor. Or it's about that preaching style. You know, church is about these things from our perspective. Church is about meeting at 9 in the morning so that I can get it out of the way and that I have the rest of the day to do whatever I want to do. Or church is about 2:45 so that I can sleep in and then I can go to church at a leisurely pace. But really the challenge is to see the church from God's perspective, because we talked about how God declares the church to be what? His bride, right? We started from the Ephesians 5 passage where Paul's talking about the relationship between the husband and the wife. But ultimately, what Paul says is, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. And so we talked about how when God sees the church, he is passionately in love with the church, that he loves the church. And it's not just, oh, I love the church, but no, it's I love the church. I think about it, today's Valentine's Day. So God would be like, I would choose to spend time with the church because I love the church. And as not only did we talk about how God passionately loves the church, but we become part of this church so that God uses the church to sanctify us, right? And then in the second part, we talked about how God sanctifies us through the church. And in the second part, if you guys remember, we talked about how God shows us that we are a covenanted people. That when he says, I love you, he loves us through the covenant that he speaks into our lives. We quoted from Spurgeon how he talks about the church as the dearest place on earth, right? It's not the most perfect place on earth, but it's the dearest place on earth because it's the gathering of people who are imperfect, yet as we gather together as imperfect people that we're able to meet with this perfect love that forgives, that renews, and that restores. So we are a covenanted people, which means not only does God relate to us through this language of covenant, which is what? I give myself to you. So when you think about a covenant, immediately you think about two people making vows as they're getting married, right? And we talked about how weird that would be if they actually spoke in the language of a contract when they're making their marriage. Well, I guess you can't even say a vow when they're making their marriage contract. And that just sounds really weird, right? And in the same way, that's how God expects us to relate to one another as covenanted people. And we talked about how God gives us 51 examples in his word of how we ought to relate to one another as covenanted people. And we talked about the 51 one another statements. And it's the statement of, I become this for you, right? So it's not a system that is established by, you do this for me, then I'm going to reciprocate this for you. But it's rather a system that is established by what? I mean, when you really think about it, it's an unfair system. Because you are expecting to do these things for others, but really, you're not really expecting those things to be returned back to you. Or at least that's not your motivation. Your motivation isn't, I'm going to go and greet someone, because in the Bible it says to greet one another, in this expectation that someone else is going to come up and do that favor or return that favor, but I'm going to go and greet someone else in this church, because that's the language of a covenant. And so it's really an system that is based on unfairness, or maybe another word for that would be servanthood. A system that is based on us serving one another. And so those are the two things that we talked about. And so how we're going to close this thing off is this, that we want to talk about how we as a church, that ultimately we need to be a church that is united. What it means to be a church is a people who are united, okay? So with that in mind, let's go ahead and read 1 Corinthians 12. We're going to be looking at 12 through 27, and then right after that, jumping really quick to Acts 1, looking at 7 through 8, okay? 1 Corinthians 12, 12 through 27, this is the word of God. It says, for just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many are one body, so it is with Christ. For in one spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and all were made to drink of one spirit. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to that body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less part of that body. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the sense of hearing? If the whole body were an ear, where would be the sense of smell? But as is, God arranged the members in the body, each one of them, as he chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable, and on those parts of the body that we think less honorable, we bestow the greater honor, and our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty, which our more presentable parts do not require. But God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together. Now you are the body of Christ and individually members of it, and God has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, then miracles, then gifts of healing, helping, administration, and all kinds of tongues. And then we'll stop there, and then we'll jump to Acts 1. 7 and 8. This is right before Jesus' ascension. He said to them, it is not for you to know times or seasons that the Father has fixed by his own authority, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. Okay? All right. So let's go ahead and talk about these verses together. I'm going to try to connect these verses. And we'll start from the 1 Corinthians passage. And so when you think about this passage, you have to think about this in the larger context of this letter, right? That Paul is writing to the church of Corinth. And so when you think about the church of Corinth, it's a young church. It was a church that was just established. It's a very gifted church because in the beginning, Paul compliments them on the various gifts that they possess. So it's a very gifted, very talented, very highly educated church because the city of Corinth was a very influential city. It was a very educated city, right? It was kind of like Austin, a lot of hipsters. It was the city that a lot of culture was being created within the city. It was very progressive. Yet at the same time, it was a church that was very messed up. But if you read throughout the book of 1 Corinthians as well as 2 Corinthians, I mean, you know, the church itself was pretty messed up. And so Paul had to address some very serious sin that was going on and that was being neglected in the church. So not only was it a young church that was very gifted and very messed up, but also instead of influencing the culture around them with the gospel, it was a church that was letting culture dictate how they understood and lived out the gospel, the realities of the gospel, not only in their gatherings, but even outside of the church. And not only that, but it was also a church that was together, yet a church that was terribly separated. Now, I want us to think about that, especially that last part, that it was a church that was together, but yet terribly separated. They weren't separated in the sense that they weren't together, because obviously they were together. They were worshiping, you know, albeit they weren't worshiping in the best manner possible, I guess, right? But they were still worshiping together. But when you think about their worship and what some of the things that Paul had to address throughout the letter, they weren't together at all, because as people were coming, they were coming for different purposes. And that's why, even before this, when he's talking about the Lord's Supper, he's saying, you know, some of you, when you come together to observe the Lord's Supper, some of you go ahead and you eat it in one way, another person gets drunk, and, you know, he's talking about, like, this is no way to treat the Lord's Supper. This is no way to do communion. And so it was a church that was together, yet it was a church that was very separated. that there was no unified vision or understanding of why they were coming together to worship, even though they were worshiping. There was no understanding of why they were doing the things that they were doing, like why they were practicing these gifts of the Spirit, why they were observing communion. They were coming together under their own separate understanding of what they wanted to do, and maybe also what they needed from their time together. Right? And so when we think about that, I think in one hand, I want to be careful in the way that I say this because, you know, in saying this, I don't necessarily want to come off as saying that, you know, when you come to church, that somehow you have to leave your needs behind, right? Like, in the church, you cannot, I know that you might have specific needs, but that's bad. Like, we have to have some sort of a system where you check that in before you come into the church. I mean, that just absolutely sounds ridiculous, right? I mean, that's like saying, if you're going to come to the hospital, before you come, you have to make sure that you get well. You cannot bring your sickness into the hospital. Right, if there was a hospital that advertised itself like that, right? Oh, we are a hospital that is here to meet your needs, except your sickness. So please come and visit us anytime that you want, except the times that you're sick. You're never going to go visit that hospital. And I think in the church, the same way, that we have to be here to meet the needs of people. And in fact, God delights to meet the needs of people. And that's what we talked about all of last weekend when we had the retreat. How God wants to meet us as Father, as a personal God who not only understands where we are, but God who is at work, who is in this pursuit of meeting us and ministering to us. So I think that's very important that we understand that God, yes, He's here to heal us. He's here to meet with us. But the problem that we see in the church of Corinth is that they had some of that understanding here and there. They had some understanding of, I guess this is kind of the reason why we're attempting to come together to do worship, and maybe this is why we're reading the Word of God, and this is why maybe we're trying to listen to the message, but we're not really sure, right? But ultimately, what they failed was what? They failed to be unified under this vision of what the gospel represented for them. And really the implications of that gospel for themselves and for the people around them. That there was no unifying vision of what the gospel was and the impact that the gospel was making in the lives of the people. And when I think about the church, I mean, out of all the different organizations that we see in the university and as well as the city around us, really, the church has to be a place where we have to be unified with this understanding of what the gospel is. And so with that in mind, there's two things that I want to point out, and then after that, we're done. Okay. So the first point that I want to make is simply this, that the gospel has to really take the center stage. When it comes to understanding what the church is, who we are as the people of God, what the church does, really, the gospel has to take center stage. What brings unity amongst all of us, it's really the gospel, right? Our understanding that Jesus died for our sins and that He rose again to give us new life. It's really this understanding of the gospel that brings unity, because it's not our preference, because our preferences are very different. It's not our choice in certain musical styles, because that's very different. But it's really our understanding of what the gospel is. And it's our experience of what the gospel has done in our lives. And so we read a passage like this, and we think, okay, well, it's a young church, right? So they're disorganized. They don't really know what they're doing. They're exercising all these spiritual gifts, but it's just crazy. So imagine a service like this, right? And all of a sudden, like, someone over there stands up and prophesies, and then others person stands up and says, you know what, I want to heal someone today. And then someone here stands up and says, I want to give a word of encouragement. And someone over there stands up and says, I want to pray. And I think we should pray. You visit a church like that, you're going to be like, all right. There is no, I'm going to come back next week, right? It's like, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and that's it. Don't come looking for me in the bathroom, because that's not where I'm going to be. So you think, okay, in a situation like that, all they need is just some organization and structure. They need to hire a pastor, right? They need to come up with some sort of a structure in their worship. They need to figure out what it is that they want to do and so forth. And, you know, that's all. So that's what Paul is trying to do. He's trying to teach them what it means to be a church. But when you think about it, there's so much more than just Paul saying, okay, this is how you should conduct your worship sessions. Because for Paul's heart, it's not just about conducting worship sessions. He did not plant this church so that he could teach them to conduct worship sessions. Right? For Paul, it's about what? It's about reproducing disciples. It's about learning to lean into the reality of what the gospel is, so that when they gather together, that they're encouraged by the gospel, that they're confronted by the realities of the gospel, that they're just challenged to go out and to live out the mission of the gospel. And so it's so much deeper than just, well, they just need to hire someone, or they need to find someone who's very structured. They need to find maybe like that alpha personality leader and just get everyone in line, and they're going to be okay as a church. But it's really Paul's attempt of trying to mature the church and to grow the church to be what the church is supposed to be, a people of God who is anchored in the gospel of grace and really striving together to fulfill the gospel mandate, right? So it's not just Paul saying, all right, well, let me teach you this lesson of what it means to get along with one another, because obviously you're not getting along with one another. If you're fighting, well, which spiritual gift is better? Right? I speak in tongues, therefore I'm better. And you're like, no, I prophesy, therefore I am better. And then this person says something in tongues and you don't understand what they're saying, right? I mean, it's not that situation. What Paul is trying to help them to see is really the connection. It comes not from the outside. So he uses this illustration of, okay, some are like the feet, some are like the head. And this verse, I mean, it's pretty straightforward in terms of what Paul is trying to say. That each of us are different parts of the body, yet we belong to the same body. And what connects us together isn't that, I mean, obviously we know that the nose doesn't look like the ear, right? But what connects the nose and the ear together is what's underneath, right? It's the muscles and it's the skeletons and it's the neurons that connect all these pieces together. It's the blood veins that run through the body. And in the same way, what Paul would say is that, yes, even though on the outside it might look different, but what connects these pieces together is what? It's the gospel that's underneath the surface. And so you hear something like this and you might say that, okay, this sounds true, yet it sounds simplistic. Yeah, right? I mean, Pastor Dave kind of talked about that last week. It sounds elementary. Like, Pastor Ben, why are you still feeding us milk? It's your fault, right? Milk, gospel. But I think the problem is this. Because when you hear something like this, I mean, it makes sense that the gospel has to take center stage. I don't think there's anyone in this room that would disagree with me. Hopefully, there won't be anyone in this room that would disagree with me when I say that the gospel has to take center stage at you know, in the church. But then our thinking, at least for me, when I think about, okay, what does it mean that the gospel has to take center stage in the church? Immediately my mind goes to, guess what? It's about what the preacher preaches. That it has to be gospel-centered and gospel-oriented. It has to somehow communicate the message of the gospel. It has to give an opportunity for people to respond to the gospel. Or we go to things like, it has to be the songs that we sing. Right? Obviously, we're not going to sing just some random songs at church. You're not going to come to church and, you know, sing songs written by XYZ. Well, just going to name some artists, but it's just ridiculous that we, you know. Obviously, we're not even going to consider those options, right? So obviously, you're thinking the songs that we sing, yes, they have to be gospel-centered. And so when we think about a gospel-centered church, that's what we think about. We think about gospel-centered programs, right? Outreach programs to campus and outreach programs to the community and so forth. And then that's it. So we think about that, and then we want to go beyond. And we want to think about what comes next. But I think that's really the problem, because that's falling short of really understanding what it means for the gospel to take center place of the church. Because the church, ultimately, it's not the program. So it's not a gospel-centered program. But if we really understand what the church is, it's the gospel-centered reality that exists in each and every one of our lives. So what Paul is talking about here is not just organizing the structure so that it somehow fits into this gospel-centeredness, or whatever that means, but it's about challenging each and every member of this body to think about what it means for the gospel to be at the center of their lives with whatever it is that they're going through. So think about what that means for us as a church. Think about what it means to be a gospel-centered church right now as you're sitting there listening to me. Some of you thinking about, okay, this week I have these exams coming up. I have this project that's due tomorrow. Or some of you thinking about, you know what? I have so much to do at work this upcoming week. Or some of you thinking about, I have this problem, or I have this going on in my life. Some of you thinking about, I have this worry, I have this struggle. Or some of you just thinking, I am bored out of my mind right now. That's all right, you can be real. But even in that moment of whatever it is that's going on in your heart, what does it mean for you that the reality of Jesus, who died for you and rose again to give you now this new life, how that impacts your heart right now? How that impacts your will right now of wanting to love him more, of wanting to know his word more? How that impacts your desire right now? How that impacts not only your love for him, but your love for this person that's sitting next to you. Your love for the people that are not represented in our church. Because that's the reality of what it means to be gospel-centered. Gospel-centeredness does not come from somehow a program that is oriented around what it looks like, the gospel message. Because that's the milk. But if you want to go to, like, steak, right? Or shrimp, or vegetarians. If you want to go to salad, tofu, or whatever it is that you eat. Gospel center means, what impact is the gospel making right now in my life? And how is that being demonstrated in my worship of God? Because that's where the Corinthians were falling short. It's not that they weren't exercising these gifts on the outside. But even as they were speaking in tongues, even as they were lifting their hands in worship, their hearts weren't changing. The gospel has to take center place. The gospel has to take center place in all of our lives. But not only that, let me close with this. Ultimately, the gospel has to dictate our mission. The gospel dictates our mission. You know, I was thinking about this, and I've been thinking about this a lot, because in 2 weeks, we're going back to Peru, and it's been a long time. I think it's been close to 10 years since the last time I was in Peru. And the last time I was in Peru actually was with Grace. And this is before she got married. And after that trip, I vowed to myself, I'm not going to go back to Peru. No, I'm just kidding. It was a great trip, except for the fact that we got stuck there an extra week, right? And I think it was tough for Grace because she had to celebrate her birthday there, which she wasn't expecting. And so I was trying to help her out. So one of the Peruvians told me that one of the traditions is that you break an egg over the person's head on their birthday, right? So I was like, all right, we're in Peru. We're stuck here. I know that she wants to be, back in the States celebrating birthday with someone else. I'm not going to mention who that person is, right? But so I thought, okay, let me help her out, make her feel better. And so did we buy a cake or did they make a cake? They made it, right? So we made a cake for her and we were singing happy birthday and I snuck up behind her. And I cracked this egg, except I've never cracked an egg over a person's head in my life. This is my first time doing it. So I just didn't know how much force I needed to use, right? And so I thought, more force, the better, right? Better safe than sorry. So I just went, bam, and it actually made an impact larger than what I was expecting. And so I think she actually thought that I did that because I was mad at her, right? Because I knew that she was like, oh, I don't want to be here. So to get back at her, I went like, bam. But actually, I did that so that I could make her feel better, which she didn't. So it was a great trip for everyone. But I mean, I was thinking about the Peru trip that was coming up. And, I think in many ways, it's very special for me because it was the very first trip that I participated in. And I remember when I was participating in this trip, before I even considered going on this trip, I knew that missions was important, but there's a difference between knowing that missions is important versus actually believing that missions is important. You know what I'm talking about? Like, you can know that exercising is important for you, but there's a difference between just knowing that exercising is important versus actually believing in it and doing it. And then so I knew that it was important, but I wasn't going to apply until God really pressed upon my heart. And so I somewhat begrudgingly applied, and I didn't even apply because it was past the application deadline. And so I had to talk to Pastor Seth and said, I know that it's past the deadline and I wasn't going to do it, but I just really feel like God is telling me to talk to you because I need to go to Peru. And then he's like, what took you so long? He's like, you idiot. Like, how long did it take you to respond to the voice of God? So he was gracious and he opened up this opportunity for me. And so I went. And so when I went with this. And, we always talk about when you go on a mission trip, just make sure you don't have any personal agendas. But obviously, I went with a personal agenda. And my personal agenda was, God, I don't just want to know that missions is important, but I really want to believe that missions is important. And if I really want to believe that missions is important, then more than anything, I really need to experience your heart for missions. Because it can't just be about testimonies of others. It can't just be about what I see with my own eyes about the needs. Because, the reality is, I've seen needs around me all the time. When I was growing up in Minnesota, I saw poor people, right? I saw people that were begging on the street. Same thing when I was in college, when I was a grad student in Michigan. So it's not that I wasn't aware of needs of people around me, whether it was their physical needs or their spiritual needs, because I knew that even the poverty that I was to experience and the lack of whatever resources, soon as I came back to the U.S., I knew that there was going to be long history, that I was just going to forget about it. And so I was really praying, God, more than anything, show me your heart. And I remember it was about a 6.5 week trip. And I mean, it was a great trip, but I just really didn't have that breakthrough. And so I was praying until we were in the very last leg of the trip. And it was actually at the jungle, the same church that I took the team that Grace was on. And it was at the church, one of the very last services that we had. And it was after Pastor Seth preached, he was leading the church in prayer, and then he asked the team members to go and to pray with the people. And I remember feeling very disappointed because this was our last time. After tonight, we were going to go to sleep, we were going to fly out to Lima, and then we were going to fly back to Detroit. And I remember saying, God, I'm so desperate. I need to know your heart for your people. And I was just praying. And I knew that I should have been praying with the people, but I was just praying to God. And in that moment, God was so gracious to me because I remember the voice of God saying very clearly, Ben, do you really want to know and to experience my heart for my people? And I remember answering God, yes, God, I want to know. And then as soon as I said that, I remember just this, I can't even describe it. And it's not the sense of heaviness that came over me. You know, sometimes people say it's the sense of heaviness that came over me. But literally, it was the reality of this weight that fell upon me. And it was so heavy, I couldn't stand. And so I fell. And good thing when I fell, I was actually, there was a bench, you know, right next to me, and I literally fell on the bench, and I just felt this weight, and it was so heavy. You know, like when you're lifting something, and you're just like, oh, I can do it, oh, no, I can't do it, and there's no one that's, you know, that's spotting you, and so you're, like, stuck, right? I mean, it felt like that, and all of a sudden, I just started weeping, because I realized that that heavy burden that I felt, that was the heart of God for his people. And I just started weeping uncontrollably, and I was just weeping, and I remember God coming and saying, Ben, that's only a small portion of my burden for my people who are lost. And I just remember coming away thinking the reality of God's heart for the lost. The burden that God carries in his heart for people that do not know him, that it is so heavy that there's no way that we can carry it. That God is so passionately in love with people that he has called you and I to reach out to. And the reason why I mentioned this story is because, you know, ultimately, I think what Paul is talking about is not just, okay, we